This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can always get in touch with the show as well online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on the show page there and you can leave a comment for the show. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You always text the show, 843-608-1734. Or join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. I was talking last hour about Mark Kingston coming back as the head coach of the Gamecocks and why maybe his performance doesn't deem another opportunity. Some other things are at play leading to him coming back as head coach of South Carolina. Speaking of the Gamecocks, don't forget you could join the Gamecock Club for the Charleston County Welcome Home Tour featuring Gamecocks men's basketball head coach Lamont Paris as well as the head football coach Shane Beamer. For exclusive Gamecock athletic updates, a Q&A, autographs, and more. It's coming up Thursday, June 16th. So 2 weeks from this Thursday at the Porter Room at Holy City Brewing Company. Doors open at 6 p.m. Tickets are $40 for adults. Tickets include food provided by Kickin' Chicken, and a cash bar is available. It's in North Charleston, the Porter Room at Holy City Brewing. There's parking as well, but they encourage carpooling, Uber, Lyfts, yada, yada, yada. So go get your tickets now. $40 for adults. Kids 12 and under, it's $15. Thursday, June 16th, the Gamecock Club for the Charleston County Welcome Home Tour is stopping in North Charleston. Get your tickets now. Hey, hopefully you had a great Memorial Day. Yesterday, you know, I saw a recent study or poll found that only 28% of Americans realize why we have Memorial Day or why we celebrate, for lack of a better term, Memorial Day. That's kind of sad. Only 28% of people. Right, Memorial Day, though, of course, is always an important day and a huge day. And I think a lot of people may confuse it with Veterans Day or wonder, you know, what's the difference? Veterans Day is a day to honor all those who have served, where Memorial Day is more for those who made the ultimate sacrifice and lost their lives in protecting this country. And I'm always incredibly grateful. I've had family members who have served. I'm incredibly grateful because, number one, I'll be honest with you, I'll tell you straight up, I'm not man enough to do it. And number two, because it allows us to do the things we love, such as sit here and talk sports all day. So anybody that ever serves for the country, let alone, you know, makes that ultimate sacrifice and then, you know, what the families have to go through and everything, I'm always very appreciative. So hopefully you had a great Memorial Day, but always keep that in mind as you celebrate, you know, a day off of grilling or cooking or barbecuing or watching baseball yesterday or just kicking your feet up and not having to work. That's why only 28% of Americans, according to this one poll, understand that, which I think is a little sad. Don't ever forget. Don't lose sight of the importance of a Memorial Day and a Veterans Day and all these days that we celebrate for a reason. Don't forget the origin of said holidays or days off for you. And hopefully you had a great day, right? It's always a little awkward or can be seen as awkward to say, like, hey, happy Memorial Day, because it's not really supposed to be like a happy thing when you get to the crux of the holiday. But you know what people mean when they say happy Memorial Day, right? Hopefully you still have like a good day of celebrations, but just understand what we are supposed to be celebrating. More often than not, it becomes a celebration like the start of summer. And because you have a day off, right, and you have a cookout and everything, and it's starting to get nice out, and you have a long weekend, you go to the beach. But just remember the origin, especially in these parts, of course, around here, right? Remember why we have Memorial Day and why it is an important day. Now, to look at it from a lighthearted side of things, when you look at Memorial Day or just the idea of how you celebrate with cookouts, there was a story over the weekend. Now, I've always said that potatoes are the most versatile food. You could do anything with potatoes. You can have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I'm sure there's desserts with potatoes as well, right? Potatoes, the most versatile. You could do everything with a potato. And I think hot dog is the most impressive food. Because think about the hot dog. Over the weekend, there was a truck that crashed in Pennsylvania, spilling 15,000 pounds of hot dog filler on the highway. Hot dog filler, which is also known, I guess, in the industry as pink slime. Now, if you want, I know it's about the lunch hour. If you haven't eaten yet, you could go Google the photos. It looks pretty disgusting. This quote-unquote pink slime that was just, like, spread out on the highway after the truck drove off the road, crashed, and all the slime came out. And evidently, that's what they put, like, in your hot dogs. And maybe if you get the more expensive hot dogs, you get better quality meats. But if you think about what a hot dog is, Noah Kapp from the Food Network, who does that Carnival Eat show, we've had him on the show before. Great guy. He's a funny guy. He's a comedian at heart, but he does a lot of hosting on the Food Network. I'll steal his bit when he talks about the hot dog. And he said, imagine if somebody came up to you and they said, try this. It's lips, ass, and stomach lining that's churned up in a machine to a pink paste. Right? It's like a bag of liposuction that is stuffed into a condom placed in a bun. Right? Want to take a bite? And yet we eat hot dogs all the time. Knowing what it is, you still eat that hot dog all summer long, and you love it. And I'm guilty, too. I love a good hot dog, especially on July 4th or Memorial Day, right? You're cooking out, you're grilling, or you go to a baseball game. You got to get a hot dog. Love a good Fenway Frank. We love our hot dogs. In fact, between Memorial Day, yesterday, and Labor Day, it is believed that 818 hot dogs are consumed every second. Not day, not month. 818 hot dogs every second. Another 818 hot dogs were just eaten in this country. Another 818. Oh, there's another 818. So on and so forth. 7 billion hot dogs are projected to be eaten in America this summer until Labor Day, which is what, like 10 weeks from now till Labor Day? 7 billion hot dogs. It's crazy. And again, I am guilty. I love a good hot dog as well. I think the hot dog is the most incredible food around. If you really get down to like what it is, what's in a hot dog or what a hot dog is made of, it's pretty disgusting. And yet, we know it, we don't care, and we eat these things all the time. You probably had a few hot dogs this past weekend if you celebrated. Now, when you get to cookout essentials, this is my question. Is it a cookout? Is it barbecuing? Is it grilling? I think barbecuing is when there's actually some barbecuing going on. It can't just be burgers and dogs, which is the normal. That, to me, is more just grilling or cooking out. But growing up, I think we called it all the same. Like, we're going to barbecue tonight. Even though it's just hot dogs and burgers, maybe some you throw some chicken on there. Or we're going to cook out, we're going to grill. To me, growing up, I think all those terms are kind of universal. I'm sure that's not the case most places. And I do understand there's a difference, but I think most people use the terms kind of all the same. Cookout essentials, right? You got to have the hot dogs and the burgers. Those are the main go-tos. And then you can throw on some chicken. Now, growing up, we always used to do the kielbasa. Love a good kielbasa. That was kind of like the teaser, the warm-up. We do the kielbasa first. And it'd be like a barbecue kielbasa and barbecue sauce and everything. Oh, and they put some rub on there. Love a good kielbasa. And then maybe, like on a special occasion, maybe there'd be some ribs, maybe even some steak. But that was more for like the family. When you're having people over, right? That's a big ask if you're going out and getting steaks for everybody or even ribs for a big party or a celebration. So every once in a while, if I remember correctly, I think we'd have some ribs or some steak at the cookout. And maybe you'd also sometimes do some kebabs. I'm not a big kebab guy. I think that's, you know, I just want the meat. I don't like when you got to get through, like, the onions and the tomatoes and whatever other veg just to get to, I just want the meat, right? Don't make me have to eat vegetables to get to my meat. That's what you should do to kids that don't want to eat their broccoli or anything. I give them a kebab, and then they have to go through it, or then it's so much effort, then you got to take it off the skewer. Ah, such a, kebabs, I could do without the kebabs. But we did a lot of kebabs growing up. And I'd say on the side, you need a good corn on the cob. And then we would always do all the different salads. You'd have a macaroni salad, you have a potato salad, you have a pasta salad. It'd just be a buffet of salads. Those are always the sides. Maybe some coleslaw thrown in there, and maybe some potatoes. Like maybe you get a baked potato, or you get some roasted potatoes. Those are always good as well. Like I said, potatoes the most versatile food item we have going. And I think those were the essentials. Now, if you want to get carried away, you want to tell me, right, you're doing some ribs, and you're barbecuing, you're pulling some pork and all that stuff, knock yourself out. I grew up in the Northeast. We didn't do that. We just threw burgers and dogs on the grill and had a good time. Trent, when you think of a cookout and cookout essentials, what would you think of? Was there anything that I certainly obviously missed?
No, you hit all the sides, Luke. I think that's the most important part, right? Obviously, you have your meats, but you got to have a good pasta salad, got to have corn, got to have coleslaw. But I think, I don't know, all the cookouts that I went to, and you grew up in the Northeast, I grew up in the Southeast, it was a lot of barbecue. It was a lot of ribs, a lot of pulled pork, a lot of smoked chicken, things of that nature. I mean, burgers and dogs were always there, but I think at least my family focused more on the true barbecuing, you know, with ribs, pulled pork, all that stuff. So, but you nailed everything with the sides, absolutely. The sides are, in my opinion, the most critical part. You have to have good sides.
Oh, absolutely. Now, so then is there, if somebody says cookout versus barbecue, like, is there a big difference between those terms for you?
Not really, but I would say that we're going to barbecue. I think there should be, you know, ribs, smoked chicken, brisket, things of that nature. If we're doing a cookout, it should just be grilled chicken, burgers, hot dogs, things of that nature.
I do agree with you, and I know some people have, like, a heated debate on it. I don't disagree. I just know of plenty of people that use the terms all the same. But there's a restaurant called Cookout, right? And they don't do, like, ribs and pulled pork. They're just doing burgers and dogs and some corn dogs, stuff like that, stuff they actually cook out on. Hopefully you had a great Memorial Day celebration over the weekend. And forget what I said about those hot dogs the next time you take a bite. Because hot dogs, really, at their core, are pretty disgusting. And yet, I love a good hot dog. Make sure, you know, I guess the real thing, the lesson is to make sure you buy the high-quality hot dogs. You get some of those cheap hot dogs that come like with so many in the box, right? That's, you don't know what you're getting in those things. Just getting pig liposuction. Hey, let me get to this because I love this story because it's relatable. This whole Jock Peterson, Tommy Pham thing in baseball. Look, I don't know. I can't really relate to like Jimmy Butler pulling up and taking that three and playing in game seven and it's a packed house and the season's on the line and you're trying to go to the NBA Finals. I can't really connect to that. I've never been in that situation before. But I can relate to a couple of baseball players fighting over fantasy football because I have been in those situations. I have had plenty of arguments with people in my fantasy football leagues about what's right or what's wrong. In case you missed this story, and I don't know how you could, it's been everywhere. Jock Peterson, of course, on the Braves last year, won a World Series with the Braves. He got slapped over the weekend before the game. Tommy Pham went up to him and I guess was upset, started yelling at him, and then he slapped him in the face like Will Smith did to Chris Rock. And it was during batting practice, so they were out on the field, they're in the outfield, all the players ran out there, so that was pretty much all there was to it, was the slap to the face. Pham's been suspended, I think rightfully so, and everybody was wondering what the heck happened here. And Jock Peterson explained after it happened a couple of days ago that it was about fantasy football. Here's Jock Peterson's explanation about why Pham was so upset with Jock that he slapped him, open hand slapped him in the warm-ups before a game the other night.
We were in a fantasy league together. I put somebody, a player, on the injured reserve when they were listed as out, and added another player. There was a text message in the group saying that I was cheating. Because I was stashing players on my bench. And then, I don't know, I looked up the rules and sent a screenshot of the rules, how it says that when a player is ruled out, you're allowed to put him on the IR. And that's all I was doing. And then it just so happened that he had a player, Jeff Wilson, who was out. And he had him on the IR, and I said, you literally have the same thing on your team, on your bench. And then I guess he was in two leagues, and in one of them he was on the IR, and one of them he wasn't. So maybe that was a confusion, but on the ESPN league we were in, it was listed as out. So it's like it feels very similar to what I did. And that was basically all of it. There's not much more to it.
Jack Peterson explaining the situation. It was over a debate or an issue in a fantasy football league. By the way, people that don't play fantasy football always look down. I think the worst thing that they've done is the name, and I understand why it's called fantasy football. But as Jack Peterson, he didn't even say football when he referred to it. He just said we're in a fantasy league. Right? That sounds like Dungeons and what's that game? Dungeons and Dragons? It sounds like so nerdy when you say, like, oh, in our fantasy league. And so people that don't play fantasy sports, like, I'll talk to people in my life, I'm like, oh, you play fantasy football? Because they don't really understand how it works. The name does a disservice to fantasy football when you're talking about, you know, your fantasy. your fantasy team. It does sound pretty lame. But obviously, if you participate, I'm sure you love fantasy football. It's why you play. And while this may seem like a nerdy topic, about 40 million Americans are playing fantasy football these days. So it's obviously incredibly popular. A couple of takeaways or a couple of things on this. Number one, is this an issue? Now, Trent, before we just came back on the air, you said you made a comment about getting back into fantasy football. So currently, are you not playing fantasy football these days?
I haven't played, Luke, in the last couple of years.
Wow.
Now, I played my either junior or senior year of high school and won the league. And so I was kind of riding a high horse. And then the next year I came back and finished last in the league. So I thought I lost my fastball, and I got kind of more into the sports betting world and studying those lines, things of that nature. But I think people who play fantasy football and are good at it have a very big importance in the sports media world. There's no doubt about it. They can talk about players better than you and I can because they study these players and look at all of their averages and things of that nature. But I want to get back into it. I might have to, Luke. We might have to set up an office league this year, and we'll get back into it.
Have you ever had any, when you were playing fantasy football, did you ever have any like big issues that ended friendships or caused real drama in the league?
No, just a lot of rude, hateful speech throughout the group chats. There's no doubt about that on a week-to-week basis, but nothing that would ruin a friendship. No, no, sir.
Yeah, we have had a couple in our league history over the years. But first, before I get to that, is this even an issue? So what Jack Peterson's saying here, the problem was he was, quote-unquote, stashing players on the IR. If you're unfamiliar with fantasy football, right, you have an IR just like professional teams do, and if a guy's designated as being out or not playing, you could put him on the IR. Now, if this is a problem, then I could tell you I'm a pretty big Bush League fantasy player, I guess, because I do the same thing. I always stash players on the IR. I want to make sure those IR spots are filled at all times. In fact, right now I'm doing fantasy baseball, and we have four IR spots because COVID is still an issue. Guys will just be unavailable, you know, at first pitch. And instead of having to drop them or having a short bench, you need more IR spots. We have four IR spots. I try to fill them up at all four times. At all times. I have four guys that are on the IL on my IR because I want first crack at them. That when they come back from their injury, they're available to me instead of having to go through the waiver process. And you're not breaking the rules. Maybe it's a little bit of a loophole per se, but you have those IR spots for a reason. So I always use the IR spots. So if Jack Peterson's doing something wrong, then I guess I am too, because I always do the same thing. And there is one person in one of my leagues. I'm in five fantasy football leagues now. It's become a problem. I've tried to minimize, and I've gotten back to now five. But one person, only one in one of the leagues, always complains about stashing guys on my bench. But hey, they're designated as being out. They can't play for me that week, and you have IR spots. There should be no issue. Tommy Pham didn't see it the same way. He had a real problem, and he slapped Jack Peterson over it. All these months later, football season, fantasy football ended 5 months ago. He's still upset about it, which tells me that there must have been some big money on the line, right? I think that's the only reason why you get this upset over fantasy football. Because if there's money on the line, then I could get it, right? Why you'd be upset. I still don't think Jack Peterson did anything wrong. But if you got like thousands of dollars on the line, I could see why you think someone's being a little bush with one of their moves. You don't like it. By the way, the setup we have here, I can always hear Jim Rome in my headset from our sister station, and I hear him talking about fantasy football right now too. So we're on the same page, Jim. But there has to be a big money. It also shows that football is king. I don't think you're going to see a fight in an NFL locker room over a fantasy baseball league. Well, you'll see a fight on a baseball field over a fantasy football league because football continues to be king. Now, my league, real quick, my two stories that one guy got kicked out of the league and hasn't been back. I don't think he wants back. When he got eliminated, he dropped all his players onto the waiver wire, which was, you know, that's a no-no. I don't know why he even did it. I forget the reason. And then all his players, right, his first round ever became available. That's kind of lame. Once he was eliminated from playoff contention. We kicked him out of the league. This was years ago. He hasn't been back since. The other time was a real issue. This guy's still in the league. But when he was the commissioner, this was way back when, before you had the app on your phone and it would like give you notifications or tell you every move, you really had to keep a close eye. Unfortunately, somebody in our league was keeping a close eye. But our commissioner of the league, he was the only one that had the ability to do this, he swapped out players on his bench afterwards. So if you weren't paying attention, this was back before smartphones and apps. You'd have to go online, and you'd have to look at everybody's lineup and keep a close eye. He had a guy on his bench that scored more points than one of his starters, so after the fact, he switched him out because as the commissioner, you could do that. And he got caught, and of course, he was removed as commissioner, but he is still in the league. And that was a pretty shady thing to do, especially with money on the line. Now, we don't play for big money, but good money. And so when you have people cheating, right, it is, especially amongst friends, it is a pretty scummy move. But in this case, I don't think Jack Peterson did anything wrong, and he got slapped by Tommy Pham before the game. Now, here's the second part. So Pham addressed it. So then they had to go back to Jack Peterson like the next day and say, okay, here's what Pham said about the situation. Is this accurate? Maybe there's more to this whole situation. Here is Jack Peterson explaining the other part of the problem between him and Tommy Pham over the weekend.
I know what he said, and either it's true. There are there was a lot of money involved in it. There, I did send a GIF in the group chat that was making fun of the Padres. In the group chat, there was also some. There was more than one Padre. There was maybe four or five that I'm kind of close with a couple of them, and it was supposed to be a friendly thing, just making fun of. They were playing bad and just talking back and forth. And, yeah, I mean, he did not like that and responded. Jock, I don't know you well enough to make any jokes like this. And, yeah, so then I wrote back. I'm just trying to pull it up so it's exact. Was meant to be all fun and games. No hard feelings. Sorry if you took it that way. And then about 2 weeks later, after like week four or five, he ended up leaving the league. And there's been no communication since. But like I said, it is true. I did send a GIF making fun of the Padres. And if I hurt anyone's feelings, I apologize for that.
That was Jack Peterson, the follow-up over the weekend. I mean, it's almost like an SNL skit. You feel like you're being put on by these guys, or Jack Peterson at least, making up some fabricated story to cover up the real reason why Tommy Pham slapped him. It sounds so ridiculous. And he did show on his phone, he showed the GIF that he sent, which was three weightlifters next to one another, where like a kettlebell. They were throwing a kettlebell in the air, something similar to a kettlebell. And you had one that has the Dodgers logo put on them, another one with the Giants logo put on them, and the Padres. And the Giants and the Dodgers, those bodybuilders are able to throw the weight over their head. And the Padres bodybuilder throws it up in the air, and it comes back down and lands on them and knocks them to the ground. And that was the gif that Jock sent while he was winning a World Series at the Braves last year because the Padres had such a great roster and struggled last season. And Pham, eventually, he pulled the biggest issue, the biggest problem in all this, that Pham quit the league. You can't have somebody quit the league in the middle of it. That throws the whole league off. That's the biggest issue. 4 weeks in, he took his ball and went home. Now, my question, on a more serious note, is just, what has happened here? Right, where we have Will Smith go up and slap Chris Rock. And by the way, this is even worse because this was like premeditated. We believe that Will Smith was just responding in the moment. In this case, Pham has been upset. If he quit the league after Jock said week four or five, that's October. It is now just about June. And he's still upset over this in fantasy football. And he knew the first chance he got to see Jock, he was going to go slap him or do something about it. But you had Will Smith. You have this story. You have the whole Josh Donaldson, Tim Anderson thing, which I haven't addressed because I think it's ridiculous. And to me, there was no racial intent. And all that was trash talking from Josh Donaldson towards Tim Anderson. And Tim Anderson, you know, took it personally. What's going on here? Where Tommy Pham gets so upset over a gif sent about the way the baseball teams are playing last year. He quits the league. He doesn't talk to Jock. He slaps him the other night. What has happened to trash talk amongst athletes? I mean, as long as you keep it clean, there's nothing wrong with sending a funny gif to make fun of a couple of guys on a team for not playing well. Tommy Pham, toughen up. How soft are you? You quit a fantasy football league, you go and you slap Jock Peterson. Maybe there's a reason why he's been on four teams over the last 9 years. Maybe he's wound a little too tight. Loosen up a bit. It's fantasy football. Have some fun. All these athletes these days, or even just celebrities. Will Smith, lighten up a little bit. A comedian made a joke about you and your wife. All right, settle down. That's why you're there. Anyways, I still don't think Jack Peterson did anything wrong. And if he did, then I guess I'm in the wrong because I always stash guys on my IR too. Coming up, is there a better celebration drink than milk? Plus, I'll circle back to the Matt Rhule stuff. Some thoughts on Deshaun Watson we'll try to squeeze in. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today. due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, earlier I talked about David Tepper making one decision this morning as they fired their coach, Miguel Angel Ramirez, head coach of Charlotte FC. And they did so in the middle of year one. Now, I don't follow soccer all that close, but those who do tell me a couple things. Number one, the team was performing better than kind of expected this year. He was actually doing a pretty good job. That's why it comes as a real surprise. Because number two, I am told that coaching firings are maybe more frequent in the soccer world. That as impatient as we think some of our main sports are, football teams, or even college football teams, basketball teams, whatever, that I guess in the soccer world, coaches or man, whatever you want to call them, right? They move on from them pretty quick. But 14 games into an expansion team's first year does seem pretty quick. And the team was performing pretty well, all things considered. Now, David Tepper put out a response or a press release where he said, quote, "This is a difficult decision, but one we feel is best for the team at this time. I want to thank Miguel and his staff for their hard work during our first season and wish them the best in their future endeavors." They also fired an assistant coach, a head fitness coach, a video analyst. So who knows what truly is going on behind the scenes. The team was 5-1-8 through their first 14 matches. Who knows if it was like a power struggle, if they didn't get along, there was some tension behind the scenes. I don't know. But it seems like a surprise. Now, Felipe Cardenas covers soccer for The Athletic, and he wrote that it certainly is a surprise and a shocking development for Charlotte fans and MLS observers. When in regards to how Charlotte looked in the first year, he said they looked like a very well-coached expansion team. And so on and so forth, wrote about it for The Athletic. The reason why I bring all this up is not so much because of Charlotte FC and the MLS, but more so because, of course, David Tepper also owns the Panthers. He had, I think it was the CEO, I forget the exact title, the CEO of his sports group stepped down after like a month on the job just a few weeks ago. Right now, this Charlotte FC head coach gets fired 14 games into his tenure. For an expansion team. And the reputation that Tepper has built up and maybe some of the decisions he's made makes him out to be this very aggressive, like no BS type of guy, maybe a little too rash, like a George Steinbrenner firing Billy Martin six times and rehiring him, right? Similar to Tepper. But when it comes to the football team, because he owns the Panthers, he also runs them, he has seemed to be far more patient with a Matt Rhule than maybe some of the other decisions he's made in his professional life or as his role as a executive or owner running a sports team. And so this made news this morning, not so much because of what it means for Charlotte FC. The bigger story, of course, is the NFL, football. What does it mean for the Panthers? And if you're willing to move on from your soccer coach after 14 games into an expansion team, then A, maybe you're surprised that Matt Rhule's made it this far, but B, what does that mean for his immediate future? And we always hear about the 7 years, and Matt Rhule said this offseason about, you know, David Tepper told me I'd have 5 years today. This would be a 5-year turnaround. But all the other actions, as they say, actions speak louder than words, and David Tepper can say whatever he wants. Now, the actions originally was giving Matt Rhule that 7-year contract. So originally his actions preached patience. But since then, the actions have shown impatience for David Tepper, and I'm curious to see how patient he will be with Matt Rhule as the head coach of the Panthers. If he's firing a soccer coach after 14 games, and again, it's not like he took over the Lakers or the Yankees or somebody. I mean, this is an expansion team. 14 games in, coach is gone. And yet here's Matt Rhule on the other side. He's just trying to win 6 games. And if he doesn't do it this year, he may be the next coach fired by David Tepper. We'll get later on if we have to. I want to get to thoughts about milk. Is milk really the best drink we can come up with to celebrate? Plus, we'll get into some baseball talk because Memorial Day is always that first, like, real benchmark. They always say, right, don't look at the standings, the records, until Memorial Day. Well, Memorial Day has come and gone, and the Braves, for example, are still under 500 and almost 10 games out of first place. Later on this afternoon, we'll get into some baseball talk and look at where we are in the Major League Baseball season, really, for the first time. When we come back, it's time for Trent's Takes. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, even on a holiday, the summer golf tour went quick, selling out. So we're heading towards week four next week. We're already 3 weeks in, 3 weeks out of 10. These things go quick. Set your alarms, put in the calendar, make sure you're ready next Monday, 8 a.m. For next week, it'll be foursomes at the Rivertown Country Club for 98.9. But get there quick because these bad boys sell out very fast. This week was the golf club, Westcott Plantation. Even on a holiday, people weren't fooling around on their day off yesterday. Got these foursomes gobbled up. So head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Next Monday, starting at 8 a.m., the foursomes will go on sale. Get yours while you can. They go incredibly quick. 98.9, it's a great deal. That's why they fly off the shelves. Rivertown Country Clubs next week, Monday, starting at 8 a.m., charlestonsportsradio.com. Be there and get yours while you can. We do it around this time each and every day. Find out what's on the mind of the producer. Time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, before I get to my heat take real quick about the season, I will say that I was in New York City over the weekend enjoying the Memorial Day holiday, and it was awesome. But my main thing about New York, I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. It would be awesome if their sports teams were great. You know, when you walk around that city, you realize how many people are there, 25 million people sitting on an island together. It would be incredible if the Yankees win the World Series this year just because of that city, if the Giants or the Jets were good teams, if the Nets went on a run, if the Knicks went on a run. That was my big takeaway. It was like this city, and I go every 6 months or so often, but every time I go, I really wish that their sports teams lived up to the potential that they could have in the concrete jungle. That, I mean, from you and I's business world, like, that's a playground, New York City, when it comes to sports teams. And unfortunately, none of them are that great. And it kind of stinks. It kind of stinks for the fans there.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing. I mean, the Mets have been cursed. The Yankees are always competitive, but they have won World Series the last 20 years. The Jets and the Giants have been terrible. The Knicks have been terrible. The Nets have been interesting, but not good enough. And the Islanders have been pretty lousy. The Devils have been terrible lately. The Rangers are in the playoffs for the first time in 5 years. Yeah, so I just ran through them all. I know, it's been a tough scene. You should have stuck around the last. I'm sure last night, Game 7, the Rangers win Game 7. That's why I got my Hartford Whalers shirts on because screw you, the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm glad you're out. Blew that series. But I'm sure Game 7 for the Rangers last night, I'm sure it was pretty wild in those parts last night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. But it was good. It was very hot, Luke. Very hot. Didn't realize it was going to be that hot. It was about 88 degrees on Monday and Sunday. Very, very toasty. But New York's the best. Absolutely love it. Enjoyed my time. Hope everybody had a great holiday weekend. Now, the Miami Heat. I was watching it in New York. We were out watching the game. Luke, I had a flash about 15 seconds left when Jimmy Butler gets the rebound. He's going down the court. I flash back to the Ray Allen three-pointer. That was where my mind went immediately, especially the way Jimmy was playing in that game and the game before. Look, it wasn't a bad shot. I hear everybody on Twitter saying that was just a bad shot, bad shot. He was wide open. He had every right to take that shot. And in the moment, like you said, Luke, I could never put myself into Jimmy Butler's shoes and think, what would I do in that moment? He had a wide open lane, so either he could have driven it in, tried to get a foul, or he just went for the win and took the shot. And I understand it, could have waited a long time, but there's that. And the Max Strus three-pointer, as we talked about, being called back. A lot of weird things happen in this series, but I don't know if anybody after these last two games can say, like, the NBA is the worst, or the NBA is this, or the NBA is that. It's not entertaining, because it was a great time. I really enjoyed the last couple games, and I think now with the Boston and the Warriors series, it's going to be phenomenal. I think we're setting up for one of the best series we've seen in quite some time in the NBA Finals.
I do agree with you. Now, if you think, if you're not sure how somebody could say those things, just wait till 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll hear some of those things.
Oh, the text messages I was getting all weekend. I just stopped. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. The NBA stinks. That's what the main point is from some other hosts around these parts, but I will say that it's been very enjoyable. I wish the Heat were going into it, but I'm not that mad, just as a basketball fan, to see the Warriors and this young Celtics team go at it once again. It's going to be great, and also Boston has the Warriors number, especially in the regular season. So if Marcus Smart can lock down Steph Curry, that means Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole are going to really have to step up, and I do think Marcus Smart will get a couple. There'll be a couple games with Steph Curry, you know, going into the fourth quarter as 8 to 10 points, because Marcus Smart's playing great defense, but can he do that for a 7-game series? I will say, and they were talking about it on ESPN this morning, and I absolutely agree. Draymond Green versus Jason Tatum in this series is going to be absolutely phenomenal, because Jason Tatum could go for 40 any night he wants, but Draymond Green has been one of the most efficient defenders in the NBA over the last 10 years. To see those two guys clash is going to be awesome to watch. Awesome. And then Marcus Smart and Steph Curry obviously is going to be great.
Yeah, the Smart Curry one's the biggest one for me, because Marcus Smart has done the second best job defending Steph Curry. Number one, oddly enough, is Kevin Durant.
Wow.
If I remember correctly. And Marcus Smart's number two in terms of, like, field goal percentage he holds him to, or however they determine that as a defender. And the Celtics are the only team to have a winning record against Steve Kerr as head coach of the Warriors. So I do think it'll be a good series. I am on the favorite. I think the Warriors win, I would say, in six. But I think it's going to be a very interesting series. And the job is, right, because Jason Tatum, we've seen, he has been a little more inconsistent. The bigger job to me is the Celtics. How can you slow down a Curry or just all these different guys Golden State can throw at you? Because it's not really not about one star. It's more about the team. And the Celtics are overall a really good defensive team. So long story short, I think it's an interesting matchup on paper. And I think we get a fun NBA Finals.
No, absolutely, Luke. And I will say, if Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics win this NBA Finals, Tatum's going to be the king of Boston for quite some time. They've been waiting for us because they've been so close every year. Every year they get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm a Heat fan. I remember the battles with LeBron and those Boston squads. They finally get it, I believe, 07 or 08. But after that, I mean, they were always so, so close. And now that they're finally there, we'll see if they can capitalize on the opportunity. I do agree with you, though, Luke. Warriors in six seems like the most logical option for this series. It's just so tough. I believe I heard 18-0 at home in the last 18 games for the Warriors. Wow. In playoff series. So it's very difficult for a team in Boston to fly across the country to go to San Francisco, play two games. Yep. While the Warriors have been resting, you know, for the last week or so. I think that's going to be a little tough for the Celtics, but I do agree with the Warriors in six. Luke, this is a monumental day, actually, here on the Mono Midday Show, because we are 100 days away from the start of the regular season in the NFL.
Wow.
This is big, Luke. We're getting there. We're past the 100-day mark, and we're, you know, counting down. Now, I will say, because it's the 100th day, Luke, we should make some bold predictions right here, right now on the Mara Midday Show. That being, who will be the 2023 Super Bowl champions 100 days out for the NFL season? I'll go ahead and give you my prediction.
Sure.
There's no way Tom Brady loses this year. Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl champions.
Wow.
Going there.
And then does Brady actually retire this time?
I feel like eight in his mind, eight is good enough, because he's got two more than Jordan. He's got, and the rest is history. You know, I feel like he might be competing with that in himself, even though he already passed up Jordan having seven titles. I feel like eight would really cement him as, we have to call him, the greatest athlete of all time, no doubt.
Brady is always a safe bet. Man, I don't know. I don't know who I would pick. I mean, do the Bills have the best odds?
It goes Bills, Chiefs, Rams, Bucks. That's, and then Packers.
I just don't trust the Bills. I don't know. I can't trust them. And the Chiefs, I think the Chiefs will be fine.
Yeah.
Without Tyreek Hill, but they're a safe bet too. Man, I don't know. You put me on the spot. I don't have a good. I'm going to go chalk. It's going to be incredibly uninteresting. And I'll go with the favorite. I'll say the Bills.
Okay.
Get it done. They got close last year, at least reaching the Super Bowl. I'll say Buffalo this year. I don't feel great about that pick, but I'll go with the favorite, the Bills.
You know, Luke, I think about Buffalo, and obviously they added Von Miller, which is a great pickup for them, and they have a, you know, Super Bowl ready, probably the MVP coming up next year being Josh Allen. But I always say that in the NFL, you have to have weapons. The most weapons on your team is going to win you the championship. And the Bills have Stephon Diggs, signed him to a big deal. I know you're not the biggest fan of Mr. Diggs because of his exit from Minnesota, but they released Cole Beasley. Who else do they have? O.J. Howard catching passes for you? That's great. He was the third tight end in Tampa Bay over the last couple years. Didn't really do much. Do they have enough firepower and weapons to be able to compete, especially in the AFC? It's unbelievable the amount of talent that's in the AFC. I just wonder if they need to add one more extra piece to get over the hump. Would that be a guy like Odell Beckham Jr.? Would he want to go to Buffalo? Would it be a guy like Julio Jones, even though he's on the latter half of his career? Or even though he said, don't play yourself, I'm not coming back to the NFL, does Antonio Brown go to the Buffalo Bills and help them win a Super Bowl? But I think they need either a great running back to complement Josh Allen or one extra receiver, Luke.
I do agree with you. That was my concern with them. That's why I wasn't huge on them last year. And they almost fed me crow and almost at least won the AFC. But, yeah, it's really about Josh Allen. Outside of Stephon Diggs, as mentioned, the weapons weren't great. And in the backfield, they had no running backs. Josh Allen was their best runner. Now, they did draft this year James Cook, who I think could be good in the NFL. So maybe he'll help from the running back perspective. They could still use another wide receiver. So it's a fair concern. It's why I wasn't all that high on Buffalo last year. But then, I mean, they still found ways to win and score points and battle Mahomes there to the very end. So maybe Josh Allen's just good enough that he can make enough plays himself. But I do agree. I think they asked too much of Josh Allen. That was what keeps them from being truly one of the best teams in the league. Maybe this year will be different, though. We'll see.
No doubt about it, Luke. And also, I mean, Gabriel Davis, he's very talented. Obviously, four touchdowns in the AFC Championship game. They just need another weapon. And I like James Cook. There's no doubt about it. Obviously, you love his brother being there in Minnesota. And they both, I mean, it's crazy to think about. They both play similar styles. They can go out of the backfield very quick. Last thing here, Luke, I was going on just reading some odds, doing some things this morning. Who has a better chance to win 10 games this coming NFL season, the Cardinals or the Patriots? Both are plus money odds to win 10 games. So right now the odds makers are thinking the Cardinals and the Patriots might not get past 10 games.
Loving these questions. These are great questions.
Thank you.
We've had one a day here with these NFL teams. This is a tough one. I mean, I guess I would say the Cardinals would have the better chance.
Sure.
But they're in a tough the Dolphins are good this year. That division could be tougher. I would say the Cardinals, they both made the playoffs. I don't know. I'm waffling. I don't have a strong opinion here either. I guess I would say the Cardinals. I trust Kyler Murray more than Mac Jones, but I also trust Belichick more than Kingsbury. Mm. You get two easy wins against the Jets. I'll go with the Cardinals, but I don't feel great about that. But that's a great question of getting to 10 wins. I know a lot of people think the Patriots take a step back this year. I don't know how much better it'll be than last year, but I don't think they get a whole lot worse. I think Mac Jones could be better in year two. And the Cardinals had a lot of noise. I mean, Hopkins is going to be out for a few games. Kyler's unhappy. They fall apart in the second half every year. That's a really good question. I think I would say the Cardinals, but I don't feel great about it.
Cardinals probably be the safe pick, right? But also, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with this Kyler Murray contract? Can Hopkins stay healthy? Can J.J. Watt stay healthy when they need him most? I think bringing in Marquise Brown helps, I think. Zach Ertz, he's a good tight end. Can he be the, you know, pivotal part of their offense? They need that, you know, the Travis Kelce to Patrick Mahomes type connection with Kyler and Zach Ertz. But we'll have to see. I'd agree with you, though. I think the Cardinals are probably the safest bet because who knows? I mean, Bill Belichick's now apparently running the offense for New England Patriots.
True.
So they might go undefeated, Luke. We have no idea. We have no idea.
Yeah, I guess I understand the concerns for the Patriots because they have no coordinators. Joe Judge is a special teams coach. He's going to coach quarterbacks. And Matt Patricia was a defensive coach. He's, like, coaching the offensive line now. Belichick's calling plays. I don't know what's going on over there. So it could either be a disaster or, knowing the genius of Belichick, they're going to be the best offense in the league because he's calling the plays. I have no idea. And I know people aren't high on Mac Jones, so I get the concerns for New England. It's just hard to bet against Belichick. And they did win 10 games last year with a rookie quarterback. So can they win 10 again this year in year two? I wouldn't put it past them. You should probably beat the Jets both times. Maybe you beat the Dolphins twice. I don't know. There's four wins right there in your own division. The AFC is really tough. I'd have to look at schedules. It's a good question. It'd be hard to bet against Belichick, but I guess I just feel better about Kyler. And the NFC is just so weak compared to the AFC. But man, 100 days out. It's It's easy to get excited already for the NFL season. We got baseball players fighting over fantasy football. Right? We're all getting in the mood for the football season. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about the SEC meetings, which have started today, and the things that they'll be talking about on their schedule here this week. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour two. And I've been teasing this. Maybe I'll pay it off next about milk as a celebration choice. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I have to be quick here as we wrap up hour two. Can we come up with a better celebration drink than milk? The Indy 500 is over the weekend, and I know it's a tradition. At this point, it becomes tradition, so you can't change it. For the winners, drink milk afterwards? Now, it all started, I had to look this up because I was very curious. 1933, maybe you know the story, but it started with Lewis Meyer. Lewis Meyer won the 500 in 1933, and he sipped from a glass of milk afterwards because he said his mother told him a glass of buttermilk was the best thing to drink on a hot day. And then when he won again in 1936, he was drinking milk right out of the bottle afterwards. And they took a photo of it, and it was in the papers, and, hey, this guy won the race, and look at him drinking the milk, and his mother says, all right, buttermilk's the best thing on a hot day. Now, it went on hiatus for a while, and people were not drinking milk. And then it wasn't until 1956 that the practice truly took hold. And now, since 1956, the winners always get milk after winning the Indy 500. And they even have their choice. You could choose from whole milk, 2%, skim milk, whatever you want. You get your choice. They got all the milk you could need for you. And you could pick which milk. Now, I know it's become tradition, but if you get, like, a job promotion, are you going out to the bar for, like, a drink with your friends, or are you going home to have a glass of buttermilk? And what are we doing here? We could come up with a better celebration drink than having these guys chug milk like they're stone cold afterwards. And what's worse, having to drink the milk after on a warm day? Right? It's like Anchorman. Is milk really a good choice on a hot day? I don't know. I would question Mrs. Meyer way back when. But what's worse, having to drink the milk or having to kiss the bricks after the race? Both pretty lousy traditions for a guy who just won. Now they got to kiss the ground and drink milk. Ugh, no thanks. Hour three next.